Now, here is Rick Smith.
So sad news today. Peter Fonda passed away. You know, the star, you know, I remember the kid movie as when I was a kid, Easy Rider, him and Dennis Hopper. It was, you know, just one of those iconic movies. He's passed away. Died of respiratory failure due to lung cancer. He was 79 years old. I'm going, wow. 79 years old. We're all getting older. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. I've got Michael Esker, Talk Media News. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I had not heard this about Peter Fonda. It's very saddening. Easy Rider was, of course, an iconic movie of that era, the late 60s, early 70s. I remember I was living in London at the time and saw it at a theater there, and the reaction among the crowd, the British crowd, was just fabulous. They loved the movie. They loved what it was saying. The message behind it all about taking your chances and living your own life. And of course, that was really the first time that we saw Jack Nicholson in a mainstream movie. Now, is Dennis Hopper still alive?
I think he is. Hopper's turned into a rabid right winger.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's been a number of years, but
he
went from the Easy Rider guy to way out.
Wow. And of course, Peter Fonda from that incredible acting family, Henry Fonda and Jane Fonda, the three of them just really monuments to American cinema.
Yeah,
sorry to hear about it. 79 years old, and one of the great things about being a movie star is you get to have your image preserved forever in your best moments.
Yeah, it got me thinking, maybe I want to sit down and watch it again this weekend. Give me something to do.
Yeah.
Because you're right. It was an era where that we were loved as a country. And I mean, this idea of, of freedom and, pursue your path and all of that. And
absolutely.
Back to from an era where the rest of the world looked at us, well, at least better than they do now. Let's get on to the news. Yesterday, we find out that Israel, at the behest of the president, denies entry to two congresspeople. Now, I guess one of them going to go to the West Bank, been given permission to go to the West Bank. Am I getting this right?
And she said, no, forget it. Here's what's going on. Look, you do this every day. You and I do it a couple of times a week. We engage in the American dialogue. That's what happens in a democracy.
Right.
We talk things out. We are allowed to argue with each other. We are allowed to express what we really feel. And this is beneath these two great democracies, the United States and Israel, for Israel to first say, yes, these two congresswomen can certainly come in, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan and Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, who happen to be the first Muslim women ever elected to Congress. And then they get pressure from Donald Trump. I don't think you should let them in. He puts pressure on them both in public and in private, and Israel changes its mind. Benjamin Netanyahu caves in. I mean, talk about being a puppet.
Right. But do you think he caved, or do you think that's the natural tendency anyway?
No. They were ready to let him in. And then when they got the pressure from Trump, they changed their mind and then changed half of it back again. But all of this, and that was because there was this outrage among pro-Israelis. Among many in the Jewish community who said, look, we don't like what these women have to say. I don't like what they have to say. But that's part of the beauty of a democracy.
Right.
We let people say what they want to say, even if we don't like it. But in the case of these two women who went over there to talk about the situation on the West Bank and the ongoing, everlasting Israeli-Palestinian conflict, wouldn't this have been a wonderful time for Israel to say, yes, please come in. We want to show you why we do what we do. By saying, no, you can't come in, what does it make it look like? It makes it look like they've got something to hide.
Yeah.
Like they are doing something bad. They are doing something inhumane. That's what it looks like. And it lets these two congressional women go back and say, see, they wouldn't let us in. They didn't want us to come in. They must be hiding something. That's why we honor the idea of a democracy, and we honor the idea of a couple of lugs like you and me being able to talk things out in public, because that's what we do in a democracy. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong, but we air things out.
Yeah.
And that's what they should have done. Instead, Netanyahu caves in to this president. And when's the last time you saw a president take a domestic dispute that he has with a couple of people in Congress and tries to take advantage of that overseas? You know, they usually try to keep their domestic issues at home and not air them out around the globe. But, you know, this guy, he sets a precedent every day of the week.
Every day. You know, when this happened, I said, yep, it's Wednesday.
it's Wednesday. Why not?
You know, it could have been any other day. Because look, and I say this virtually every day. Any of this stuff would have destroyed any other administration. This guy is so polarizing and so destructive, and gets away with this stuff because his rabid base, he's feeding them what they want. And understand, you know, this thing with the squad is more than just, you know, a little personal thing. This is the centerpiece of his entire reelection campaign. It's the kind
he wants to make them the face of the Democratic
Absolutely.
Party. Yeah,
Nancy Pelosi's getting off the front page. It's now going to be these four women, and that, because it hits on all the racial, the gender, it hits on all of those points that now they can say, is this the Democratic Party? Is this what you want? It's the only way he gets reelected.
And the irony is, at first they were fighting with Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
And she sat them down in private and said, look, this is why you can't do that. You're opening the door for people like Donald Trump. You're going to allow him to characterize the entire Democratic Party based on things that you say that are out there on the fringes.
Yep.
And you're the perfect foil for him. And, you know, he's taking advantage of it to say that these two, you know, first timers are the face of the Democratic Party is, of course, absurd.
So let me ask you, from a political standpoint, you know, now that this has made its, you know, back and forth, and I know Bernie Sanders came out and said, well, if you don't let him in, maybe you want to give back the money, which I found was interesting. But, you know, do the Democrats make this an issue, or do they just, you know, okay, we're gonna let this go because you don't want to continue that talking point for them? How would you handle it?
Hopefully they will come back, these two women, and they will understand how they are playing into Donald Trump's hands.
Yeah.
And that they will talk about other things. But it brings us back to politics. And, you know, we're looking at not only Bernie Sanders, who's showing some slippage, Elizabeth Warren picking up, and, you know, the response to Elizabeth Warren is so interesting because everybody who hears her says, man, she is so smart.
She is.
She really knows what's going on.
I would hope so.
But she's very progressive, and there are people within the Democratic Party who are saying this would allow Trump to paint the Democratic Party as a bunch of socialists and that she can't win.
No, but I don't think, I see, and this is where I'm a little different on this, because I see her with virtually all the same policies as Bernie Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
Only she's talking about it as a way of a capitalist, as opposed to where Bernie has said, you know, I'm a democratic socialist, damn it.
Right.
You know, so to me, there's that little bit of difference where she's saying, no, I'm not a socialist. I'm a true believer capitalist, but we still need to do all these things.
But Trump isn't going to make that distinction.
Well, I know he's not going to. Look, it does. You could. Joe Biden's going to be the most liberal candidate ever in the history. They tried to say that Obama was the most liberal ever, and Obama was the furthest thing from a liberal.
Yes, yes.
So it doesn't matter who you put up, Mike. They're going to paint them with that
social, right.
That commie
right.
brush.
Yes, you're right. No, I think she's terrific. I think she'd be a wonderful candidate. She's so smart.
Yep.
But now we have these, you know, you saw what happened to the stock market earlier in the week, a loss of 800 points in one day, came back a little bit yesterday, came back more today. But there are smart people who are saying, you know, look at not just the stock market, look at the bond market, which is a better predictor, and that they're talking about, you know, the possibility of a recession.
Yeah, the inverted, and, the dreaded inverted yield curve,
right,
which nobody understands.
Nobody understands. It's, but you know, the problem for Trump is the one area in which he polls above 50%.
Yep.
Is on economics.
Yep, I've said from the beginning, the only way I see him losing re-election is if the economy tanks, or if we're worse off than we are now.
So here's the question: if the economy tanks, has he lost his last weapon? You know, because look, you get around at least as much as I do, and you talk to people, and you say, well, what do you think of Trump? And they go, oh, you know, I really don't like things that he says. He's a bully. He's coarse. He's gross. I don't like he says things that are racist. He, you know, blah blah blah. On the other hand, my 401k is looking pretty good. Unemployment is down. The stock market's been good. Does this strip away all of that? And do they say, hey, this guy's really bad, and he's not even helping me personally?
Yep.
It would this turn a corner? Finally?
No, and I said from the beginning, and I've said this for a very long time, the only way he doesn't get reelected, in my view, is if the economy tanks, because that's the you know, had Hillary listened to Bill, Hillary would be in the White House right now, because it is, regardless of what you believe about immigration or race relations or you know, LGBTQ stuff, it still comes back down to, can I put food on my kid's table? It's the economy, stupid, and it's always the economy, stupid.
Yeah. So hopefully, if the economy tanks for a while, that one of the benefits of it will be that we get rid of this guy.
But I don't want the economy to tank, because that means millions of people are going to lose their homes and their jobs, and there's going to be, you know, mass pain and strife, because this administration is going to do nothing to make people's lives better. And I go back to, anytime I think about recession, I think of Pat Toomey, the senator from Pennsylvania here, who said in 2008 he would have preferred a much harder down, which means that the Republican Party will do nothing to soften the blow for the people who are going to be harmed by a recession. They'll just let people crash into the rocks so that the wealthy can come in and scoop up their homes and their 401ks and all of their assets, and leave a working class in greater despair, in greater poverty, and more easily exploited. Just my little rant.
But, Rick, all these terrible things that you're describing that would take place if we have a recession would be there if Trump gets reelected, would be there for another 4 years.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the fear.
And that's the argument I've been making. There's a recession coming. We've already set the table. We've given away huge amounts of money to the wealthy. We've already done everything we can possibly do to create this.
But we don't want him to outlast the recession.
Right, and this is what my argument is. Look, you know, even if the recession doesn't hit before the end of his term or before Election Day, imagine him in the White House in 2009, when millions of people were losing their home. Do you think he extends unemployment for 99 weeks? Do you think he has a plan to help, you know, get people to stay in their homes? Do you think he does any of that stuff? And the answer is no. He follows Pat Toomey in the it should have been a harder down mentality.
Well, I follow Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist who writes a column for the New York Times, and he's got a piece today saying the Trump White House doesn't have a plan. And one of the economic columnists for the Washington Post has a piece today also, I can't think of her name, also says the Trump administration doesn't have a plan.
Probably Heather Long. Who I love over there. But no, I mean, I've said this from the beginning. And we can debate this till the cows come home. I believe you have to do something with China. I've been saying for years we need to use tariffs to rein them in. We need to have a plan to stop their currency manipulation. We need to do those things to save American jobs, to balance trade a little bit. But, you know, the sad part is, and I said this from the beginning, while the blind squirrel has found the nut, I fear that they have no plan, that they're going to screw it up, and it's going to end up worse on the other side. And here we are, possibly worse on the other side.
Well, we'll see how this plays out, but right now there are a bunch of worried people in Washington saying, what are we going to do if this recession hits? Unfortunately, the brightest of them are not working out of the White House.
Yeah. Well, the sad thing is there are a lot of worried people in the heartland of this country who are losing their farms and are worried about losing their jobs and their homes and all of that. And not to have a friend in the White House or an administration willing to help, to me, is extremely important. Let's finish up this week of wing nuttery with Stephen King.
Not the writer, the congressman.
Right. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say Stephen King. I should say Steve King.
Yes, Steve King out of Iowa, the congressman.
Who has and this is one of those moments where I talked about this yesterday. Someone said to me that I should be calling him the welfare king because he doesn't really have a job. He's a congressman,
right.
Yes,
yeah,
but he has no committee assignments. They don't give him anything to do. He basically sits in the corner with a dunce cap on and says dumb stuff like this.
Well, and what do you do once you've taken all his power away, man? But he's really embarrassed his own party. I mean, they don't know what to do with him. This week, he's always tried to say, he's against abortion, including if it's a case of rape or incest, he's still against abortion. And so, the other day he said humanity might not exist if not for rape and incest throughout human history.
Right.
It was his way of defending his anti-abortion stance and not allowing exceptions for rape or incest. I mean, it's just grotesque. And, in his case, it just follows a whole history. I mean, this guy has been saying outlandish things for years. Remember, this is a guy who last year criticized a teenage girl who survived the Parkland shooting and tried to tie her to communist China. He's a guy who opposes gay rights. He was one of only 11 congressmen who opposed aid to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
He's drawn praise from David Duke repeatedly.
Mm-hmm. That stuff's true. But, the question I keep coming back to, and as one person pointed out to me, Iowa stands for idiots walking around. How the hell does he keep getting reelected? How do they keep sending this guy back? And maybe by stripping him of any ability to write any legislation or have any say, maybe the people of Iowa go, you're not bringing the bacon home anymore. We got to move on to somebody who will.
Well, it's certainly a campaign issue for whoever his opponent turns out to be. You want me there or somebody sitting in a corner who can't do anything for anybody?
Yeah, the welfare king.
Yeah,
there he is. Pay him $174,000 a year with health care and pension benefits and the huge amount of money that his staff gets. Wouldn't you like to work for his staff? I mean, you literally have to do nothing. Show up and make paper airplanes all day.
Get me one of them jobs.
There's the ultimate patronage job right there.
There you go.
There you go. Mike, I appreciate the time. I hope you have a great weekend.
You too, pal. Take care.
Good stuff. Our good friend Michael Lesker, Talk Media News. I mean, seriously, if you're living in Iowa, and this guy's your representative, do you vote to send him back to do absolutely nothing but bring disgrace upon your district because you keep sending this guy back? Now look, he's claiming he was misquoted. Horribly misquoted. Except there's a videotape of it. There's literally him saying the exact words. The New York Times literally word for word typed out his quote with the video clip. So you could read along and watch along. It was all right there. So I don't know how you go, well, I was misquoted. I don't get it. Don't get it at all. Just really, really remarkable stuff. And at some point, do we not as a country, you go, maybe we need to weed ourselves of these type of characters? Just kind of a thought. Love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.